proceed. We'll call our next case, which is case number 58779, Wackenhut of Nevada versus Michael Smith et al. We have Mr. Rao here representing the appellant, Ms. Ensminger, is that correct? Ensminger? And Mr. Tanner representing the respondents, something like that. Mr. Rao, you may proceed. Did you want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
If I could reserve about 2 or 3 minutes for rebuttal, Your Honor, well, I do appreciate that. Justices, thank you for allowing us to appear today. I'm Michael Wall, and I represent Wackenhut, the appellant in this case. And we are grateful for the time that we're taking out of your schedule to hear this matter. This case arises from a tragedy. Everyone knows that it was a serious tragedy, but that tragedy was followed by a travesty in court. And that's what we're here to discuss. People who are not lawyers, especially here in Nevada, they think that if something happens on your business premises, you're responsible to pay for it, whether you have any liability, whether you have done anything wrong or not. But that's not the law. The law is absolutely clear. A landowner owes a duty to use reasonable care to keep premises in a reasonably safe condition for use. That's the duty of a landowner. They don't have any other duty. More important to this case than any other issue is this. The question of duty of a landowner is one of law. But this case wasn't decided as a question of duty. It wasn't decided as a question of negligence. This case was decided in a circus atmosphere where the jury was called upon to decide the issue of what community standards should be. They were never asked to decide whether there was negligence on the part of Wackenhut or on the part of Walmart, for that matter. Instead, from the very first statement that they were given, that came out of counsel's mouth, they were told, this is an important case because you get to decide community standards. And oh, by the way, that could have been you on Walmart's parking lot.
Was there objection to that statement?
There was no objection to that statement, Your Honor. I have set forth the misconduct in the briefing with all of the ones that were objected to. However, at the time that that statement was made, the decision had not yet been made by this court that without an objection, the question had not been preserved for appeal. And most lawyers believed that if you brought an immediate motion for a mistrial, so that the district court had an opportunity to deal with the issue, that would be good enough. And that's what happened here. Immediately following the opening statement, a motion was brought outside the presence of a jury for a mistrial based on that statement and many other statements that were made during the opening argument, all of which were inappropriate. But most importantly, the biggest issue is whether objected to or not, the jury was asked to decide the wrong issue. The jury was asked repeatedly by counsel to decide the wrong issue. And therefore, this verdict simply cannot stand.
We had jury instructions that were given to the jury where the jury instructions so blatantly wrong that it leads us directly to that conclusion. This is the law as the court gives, and you should follow the law. How should we observe this?
The jury instructions were given to the jury, and they didn't address the issues of misconduct. But the problem with the jury instructions is that they gave the issue of duty to the jury. The jury's led to believe by argument that they were going to decide community standards, and they were instructed that they had to decide whether or not there was a duty, what that duty was, and whether it had been breached. And that was wrong. The jury should never have had that opportunity. Wackenhut's duty was not to provide an environment where no crime could be committed. Wackenhut is not a landowner. Walmart owns the land. Wackenhut was brought in because they had a contract. And the contract is very, very simple. We will have an 18-year-old kid driving a car around. And that car will have a light bar on it, and it's a visual deterrent to crime. His instructions were clear.
Wasn't he supposed to be trained? Weren't they supposed to look at the records? At least those are the things within the contract for kind of due diligence for this security they were to provide to find out what was online.
Do they use it to provide security? Walmart had a security system that was the best in the business. They argued it themselves. One part of that is they came up with this idea that if they had a vehicle driving around, it would be a visual deterrent to crime. And so Walmart had a master agreement with Rockinet for use in the country with a whole bunch of different places where that could have been.
Say that the agreement, at least between Walmart and Rockinet, that obligated Rockinet to provide trained and qualified employees, additionally security services including but not limited to patrolling the parking lot and assisting customers. Security officers should investigate all suspicious activity and prevent and attempt to prevent criminal activity. Wasn't there sufficient evidence produced as to those issues?
No, because those issues don't exist, Your Honor. The only way you can make those issues exist is if you take multiple different documents, one of them not a part of the contract at all. Three of the statements from the four that were made there came from the document, which is the post orders, which is just Rockinet's instructions to its driver. It's not a part of their contract. It's not a duty that Rockinet undertook. But still, even if you say it's a part of the contract, in order to make the statement that you just made, you have to take a sentence from the master agreement, you have to skip the addendum, which is the only real agreement in this case, you have to then take a statement from one page of out of the middle of the context of the post orders from three different pages in order to come up with that statement. In reality, the master agreement said that there would be trained security guards. That master agreement, however, is an agreement for the whole country. It's not the specific one, and it doesn't state what the training is, and it goes on to talk about licensing and that kind of thing. When you go to the agreement that these parties have, this is the agreement, that the driver will attempt to prevent criminal activity by being highly mobile and visible to the public. In case of an incident, security officers are to observe and report. That's the only duty that they accepted. Now, if you go to the post orders, it does say in one part, it says you should be helpful to customers if there's an opportunity to be helpful. There's another part where it says you could help a stranded customer if necessary. And then there's another part which they've excised which says you should be on the lookout for suspicious people. If you look at those things, the one that talks about suspicious people is not supposed to intervene. He's supposed to observe them and report if it becomes necessary. And the other ones are simply some general guidelines, but they're not a part of the contract. They don't arise to the level of creating a duty on the part of Rockinet. They simply don't. Those statements are not what this case was about. But even if they were, even if you want to go so far as to say that a document that's drafted by Rockinet that has nothing to do with Walmart becomes a part of the contract, there was no failure there, number one, and number two, even if there had been a failure, that would not have been a proximate cause of the injury in this case. There was no failure. There was no customer who asked for help. There was no customer who was seeking help. There was no customer who was stranded. Mr. Bourne did his business. He put in his headlamp and he put down his hood and he was done within minutes. And there was no suspicious character. The only way you can get to the suspicious character is if you go to the FBI advance tapes. Other than that, he's on the premises for 12 minutes and he can't be deterred.
Okay. Mr. Wall, can you talk a little bit more about the attorney misconduct issue and Leoshi versus Cohen, how the interplay, and I know you and Mr. Tanner worked for the courts before you went out in private practice. What do we do in situations where we have opinions that come down after the trial, but before the appeals decided, it set for certain standards and all? What should we do with that type of situation? I'd be interested in your thoughts on that.
All of the misconduct in this case was objected to under the standards that were prevailing at the time of the trial. Either they were direct violations of motions in limine which were raised outside the presence of the jury, or there was an immediate motion outside the presence of the jury, and counsel believed that would be sufficient to preserve the issue for appeal. Now we have a case which says you have to have a contemporary objection or it's not preserved. The problem with that is it's too late to go back and ring the bell, or too late to go back and ring that bell at the appropriate time. In this case, many of the incidences of misconduct that I've put in my brief were objected to contemporaneously, right at the right time. And there's so much misconduct in this case that even assuming without the objection, the court would skip over and not consider some of the issues of misconduct.
So even if tested against the rush, it would be an easy call for us, is what you're saying?
Yes. The errors are plain, but beyond that, the entire case, it started out with the statement, this case is important not just for the Borens and their kids, but for our community. You are the one that's going to decide the case. You're going to set the standards of safety, standards of security, so this never happens again. That was the theme throughout, and it continued throughout. There was continuous misconduct. And then you have an closing argument begging the jury, choose human life. Choose human life. That wasn't the question.
But generally, you know, on these objections, you know, a lot of times attorneys won't object for tactical reasons. You know, how do we, as an appellate court, how do we deal with that?
Well, as an appellate court, in this case, you have to look at the means that were objected to and not set them out in any of them more. And they're sufficient in and of themselves. You have to look at the entire trial and see whether there was a fair result. There wasn't a fair result in this case. The jury was told multiple times, even though counsel had been told before the jury was even paneled, that he couldn't make the argument that if the driver would have stopped, he'd be alive today. He made the argument anyway. He made it multiple times, even though he was told before trial he couldn't make the argument. And it's an inappropriate argument. It's speculation at best. Had the driver stopped and said, hey, you okay? There wouldn't have been anything. The driver passed by on one side minutes before the assault, and on the other side minutes after the assault. The driver was there. This man could not have been deterred. That's the problem. And so we have Walmart's position in this case. They're the ones who come up and say that some misconduct was proven. That misconduct that supposedly was proven would not have been a proximate cause of any of the damage here. But Walmart then says, this is the argument. You see, without any basis whatsoever for this, they say the misconduct was directed towards Walmart, and since we got off, whacking that misnomer on prejudice. That's crazy. The misconduct in this case was directed at Lackenhut.
Okay. Do you want to reserve the balance of your time?
I would love to reserve the balance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tanner.
I think Brenda will talk more about the misconduct part, but the misconduct, as I recall, and I know we had hearings on the motion for new trial, was the opening statements about, this is an unfortunate event. It could happen to anybody. And
the motion for mistrial, and the judge denied the motion for mistrial. What happened?
There was nothing in the record to support any hearing or discussion of a hearing about mistrial based on, misconduct. Zero. And I beg, Mr. Wall to find something in the record where there was a hearing on a mistrial. There was a hearing on a mistrial, but it had to do with one of the executor of the estate talking to the jury. And if you go through the record, he had some conversations with the jury outside the presence of the court. There was some discussion about a football game.
Yes, so that's not an issue in this appeal.
It's a zero issue in this appeal. And the misconduct was never carried out through any kind of theme in this case. The only basis for misconduct was the opening that said, we got an issue here about what constitutes reasonable, ordinary care about security, keeping people safe, right? I mean, we have a community that's, we have crime in this community. We have a duty to keep people safe in this community. What kind of standard should be established for Lackenhut? And let me tell you something. If there was any problem that we had about misconduct, it had to be directed against Lackenhut. Lackenhut provided no witnesses in this case. They didn't retain an expert in this case. Their director of security, Tom Harper, their regional director, Tom Harper, said unequivocally that they should have done a crime risk analysis. That should have been part of their security plan, a crime risk analysis. Tom Harper said that. He also said, we would have expected our security guards to stop and help. And he said, we have post orders that keep people safe. And I started this case holding up post orders, and the contractor with Latinet, and I said, this contract with Latinet and these post orders save lives. They keep people alive. And it's not just a mere 18-year-old driving around a security truck with the lights on. It's following orders that say, keep an eye on suspicious persons.
And those were all admitted into evidence.
Absolutely they were. And I admonish you, please, look at the arguments on the record, on our brief, that support running evidence.
We'll look at it.
Because look at the post orders.
Right.
Tom Harper, the only witness, who I call, Tom Harper. Tom, you tell me...
Well, it's not Tom Harper, the attorney.
It's Tom Harper, the director of security for Latinet.
Okay.
And he was our best witness. He made the case that the post orders are part of the contract. And we expect the security driver to know what a suspicious person is and to stop and help in times of need. But I just want to make clear that these evidences of misconduct, I think there's three arguments they're making on appeal. The first is blame the judge screwed up here. And their first argument was summary judgment, motion to dismiss should have been granted. Based on videotaped evidence that they produced early on in this case, before any discovery, they submitted a motion to dismiss, motion for summary judgment, based on the video evidence. And it was less than a minute of video evidence. They didn't even produce it. We're standing here only because a few months ago, the clerk of the Supreme Court said, where is the video evidence? Can you imagine arguing before this panel that the district court judge screwed up because he didn't grant our dismissal based on the video evidence, and they didn't even provide the video evidence? We have it now. But I hope you have the full video evidence, because the 1 minute of video evidence is a very small fraction of what happened in this case. After discovery, and that's why this case was properly denied, the dismissal by the judge was properly denied, to allow us some discovery, to examine what the video evidence really was, and we've got 12 minutes of time where this guy never goes inside the store. We have more than enough evidence to support what he did on that property was suspicious. They didn't utilize the tools for security. But the argument here is whether or not the district judge properly denied most of the summary judgment, and we believe he did. I'm not sure how much time we have, Mike.
What you have was about almost 11 minutes. I don't know how you're going to split it.
Well, I think we decided to split it up half, so maybe I'd better come more.
I'll ask our court clerk at 7.5 minutes to ring a bell so you know when the halfway
is. I appreciate that. Yeah, thank you for that. You know, I anticipated going through argument number two, which was, okay, if the judge screwed up, the judge didn't screw up, then it must be Mr. Tanner screwed up. You know, it's either the judge screwed up, the attorney screwed up, or the jury screwed up. And that's argument number two. Jury didn't follow the instructions. And let me tell you about Mr. Tanner screwing up, because the case that you cited, Justice Gibbons, is really the law about whether or not the attorney misconduct rises to a level of reaching plain error. And so you say, well, if it's plain error, then it would have been different. Had Mr. Tanner not made these comments, they'd be defense verdict. That's plain error. But I don't know how you can actually reach that conclusion when you've got Walmart over there who got a defense verdict. How did Walmart get a defense verdict? Because all of my comments, I was so obsessed with how we didn't get a videotape the entire time of this suspicious activity. Three guys casing through this apartment for 12 minutes. We didn't get it until weeks before trial. And unbelievably, the judge allowed them to make a videotape which was presented to the jury that had nothing to do with what a security officer saw, would have seen, what people monitoring the cameras would have seen. They made up and they charged to us. The judge granted them costs of $3,300 editing of the videotapes during trial. After the second week of trial, they went back and made up a videotape. I thought it was preposterous. Unbelievable. Never seen it before. The judge allowing them to take these videotapes, and I would stipulate on the record to admit any of the tapes of the surveillance that we had ready to propose to admit, I would stipulate any of those. I wanted the jury to see what happened. Show the video evidence. Or they construed that as allowing them to make their own tape. And so they spent, you know, 30 hours, $3,000 editing these tapes so they could show a videotape. My point is, if the misconduct ever rose to a level of plain error, it has to be against Walmart. And they're not a defense verdict. You can never believe that any misconduct carried through to inhibit the jury from reaching a fair determination. The evidence in this case was overwhelming. This 18-year-old security guard, and that's my third prong here, is the jury got it right. let the juries, they're the only fact finder that can determine causation and the breach of the agreement. They determined that. And if you look at all the, if you look at the training part, I mean, just take a look at what this woman of the Guzman says on my brief. Is it on my dump?
They just kind of give you some of her time, it's okay.
I'm just going to request that you take a look at pages 20 to 24 and then go through and ask yourself, was this security guard claim qualified? He didn't even receive the post orders. He didn't even get a copy of the post orders. He had zero training. He didn't know what a suspicious person was. He never was trained and qualified. He never even received the post orders as to how he was going to provide security. And you know what? He didn't even have a two-way radio to communicate with a store. He had no cell phone to call the police. He had zero tools to provide security for that store. And it's abundantly clear that the jury got it right. And I don't think that the emphasis on attorney misconduct could ever have been raised to the level of, I asked for $1 million for each of these boys. And the jury only gave me less than a quarter of that, less than 25% of that. If you look at the Jesus de Flick case, that attorney misconduct led a new trial where the attorney asked for an amount, and this court determined that what the jury ordered was 10 times that amount. It was like 3 times that amount. And so this court determined there's no objective basis for why the jury would ever award you more than you asked for, except for misconduct, except for this impassioned desire to please what the attorney wanted. Look at the record. Listen, I could never believe that myself had very much to do at all with this verdict, and I think the jury made a point that, Mr. Tanner, we're not being given what you think the case is worth. They gave me 25% of what I wanted the jury to give us. But the record is abundantly clear about the evidence of inadequate security.
Mm-hmm. So, thank you very much, Mr. Tanner. Counsel, you have about 6 minutes and 10 seconds.
And as you approach, I'd like you to respond to this question, recognizing that there is a time lapse between this trial and the decision that came from this court in the Osh. Number one, or part A of the question would be, can we apply the Osh, and if so, how? And whether or not we should, in this case, even consider the arguments being made about attorney misconduct.
Thank you, and thank you, first of all, Justices, for allowing me to be here. My name is Brenda Ensley, and I represent the respondent, Walmart Stores Incorporated. To address the Justice's question first, actually, from the briefing, Walmart takes no position as to whether or not Wackenhut timely objected. I do think that even with Walmart's objections throughout the trial, that there were objections to misconduct that were preserved. So, if it's all right with the Justice, Walmart doesn't take a position that their Wackenhut's objections were untimely. But rather, the issue is, as touched upon in the last portion of Mr. Tanner's argument, the issue is, yes, was there misconduct? You bet. We agree with that, and we objected to it during the trial. The issue is whether or not that misconduct was so extreme that it tainted the verdict, and whether we can tell from the record we have now that it definitely and obviously tainted the verdict. This case is absolutely distinguishable from De Jesus because, one, by looking at the face of the verdict, this court in De Jesus was able to say, absolutely not for this finger injury could this over $1 million verdict be appropriate when the expert evidence proffered at trial didn't even support those kinds of damages. And two, the court was saying there's absolutely no objective basis in the record to support the verdict. And given the attorney misconduct there, absolutely the court was justified in concluding that the misconduct tainted the verdict. Here, by contrast, we can look at the instances of misconduct in the record. And Wackenhut asks, what is the basis for concluding that most of the misconduct was directed at Walmart? The record is the basis. The record will reflect, the record does reflect, that it was actually Walmart's counsel who was popping up and down all of the time to object to what was perceived as misconduct on the part of Mr. Tanner. And it was Walmart trying to craft some kind of curative instruction with the court that would cure the prejudice to both parties. At times, Watkin had joined into those objections, but it was principally, that misconduct was principally directed at Walmart. And Mr. Tanner even acknowledges that. Mr. Tanner acknowledges that both in the Bourne respondent's brief and here before the justices this morning.
So timely objection, should we remand this case back down for the record does not suggest that the judge did a Rios analysis, should we remand for that?
Absolutely not. Look, first, let me be very clear, as we stated in our brief. If this court were to agree with Wackenhut on any basis, there's no basis for including Walmart in a new trial.
Counsel, we have, and you prepared the orders in my head, there's no findings as to why the court did what they did, and that's a requirement. The court, when this conduct is so stated, the court needs to make specific findings. What do we do to do with that requirement?
Well, the court did make findings as to whether or not there was a hearing regarding Walmart's motion for mistrial that Wackenhut joined in on. And the court did make specific findings that, look, after questioning the juror...
Can you point us to the record where the court made specific findings? If there's a sufficient record, we can look back at the record, and that might let us off the hook in terms of we don't have an order that has that.
Because there can be a hearing, but I think what we're saying is that there needs to be specific findings set forth as a result of that hearing.
Well, then I would go back and state for your honors that I do think... Wackenhut needs to be the culpable party here. To the extent that they are not objecting, to the extent that they are not providing the court with an opportunity to provide specific findings, the onus is on Wackenhut, and the burden then must fall on Wackenhut to live with those the results of that.
If you call Mr. Harper as a witness, who is he called by?
Mr. Tanner.
Okay. So he's called as an adverse witness by Mr. Tanner?
Correct.
Okay.
For this is what is inexplicable. Wackenhut suggests that the attorney misconduct was so pervasive that a new trial is warranted. If that were agreed with, what we would have here is counsel would be encouraged, counsel in this jurisdiction would be, in this state, would be encouraged to commit this very misconduct to hedge bets to get a second bite at the apple against a litigant like Walmart. There's no basis for Walmart, who even Wackenhut agrees was properly exonerated. That's in their briefs. That's set forth throughout their brief. If properly exonerated, why should Mr. Tanner profit by his own misconduct and get a chance to cure any errors he had in trying the case against Walmart the first time? That would be absolutely unjust. That would be manifest injustice because... Absolutely, attorneys like Mr. Tanner would understand that, even if I'm committing such misconduct against Wackenhut that I'm creating an appealable issue, well, hey, at least I'm still going to have another shot at another litigant even if I lose against them. And so actually having an appealable issue there from their misconduct would actually be something to profit from. And that would be completely unfair to Walmart. All parties are agreeing here, because Mr. Tanner did not appeal the verdict in Walmart's favor, and Wackenhut agrees Walmart was properly exonerated. There's no basis for including them.
I'm kind of wondering why you're here, though, like that.
Absolutely. That's a great question. I asked that of Wackenhut's counsel. Wackenhut's opening brief actually said that Walmart should be included as a party in a new trial. But what is very important is that, if I could just finish the sentence,
please.
Is that they are appealing the motion for new trial, that it was improperly denied. That motion never requested that Walmart be included as a defendant in the new trial. And therefore, even if that motion was denied in error, that motion only requested that Wackenhut have a new trial as to plaintiffs.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Wall, in the appeal, did you file it against the Walmart as well, or was it only appealed the verdict in favor of the Smiths?
We appealed the judgment, which would be against all the other parties who are contestable. And the reason Walmart needs to be in there is because if the trial went the way that it did and was inappropriate, and there's a new trial because there was no, if there's a duty, which is the main issue here, not the misconduct, if there's no duty and there was no breach of duty, there isn't a new trial. But if there's a new trial because of the misconduct, that misconduct prejudiced everybody, and there wouldn't be a fair new trial without Walmart in it. The fact of the matter is, the only way that Wackenhat comes into this case is because Wackenhat arguably hired somebody who becomes their agent. They have a non-delegable duty. That's exactly what counsel has argued throughout. They have a non-delegable duty, and they're in the case.
Did you ask for a new trial against Walmart as well as the Smith parties?
No, we asked for a new trial because of the misconduct. At that point in time, Walmart was all on board for the new trial for the misconduct. Except, I mean, Walmart was on board before there was a verdict because they were all of the misconduct.
As I understand it, they brought the motion.
They brought motions. They didn't bring the motion for a new trial because at that time, they had already gotten the verdict.
But your intent was, and we'll have to look at the record, was to request a new trial both as to the Smith parties and as to Walmart.
Absolutely. There can't be a new trial in this case that would not involve Walmart. That would be a fair trial because, again, we don't have a duty, but we're only the agent if we are at all. And so the problem here is you didn't hear one word from Mr. Tanner that his conduct wasn't misconduct. Everybody, it was misconduct. But that's not really the problem here. The argument that counsel would be encouraged to commit misconduct so they can get a second bite at the apple doesn't make any sense at all.
Well, I get Mr. Romney asked you this, and Justice Douglas and Justice Inmate alluded to this with your opposing counsel, but the order entered by Judge Denton on the order denying a new trial, did the factual findings in there, he cites to Leocci, but did the factual findings in there sufficiently comply with Leocci?
No, he decided solely because Walmart got a verdict in their favor that there was no prejudice to Wackenhat. And she says, well, it was Walmart who was objecting, it was Walmart doing that. They had a joint defense the entire time, and Walmart's counsel took the lead. Wackenhat was there and involved in every step
of the way. Did Wackenhat object, or you said in the pardon your brief, where you said there were objections, were those objections made by Walmart or by Wackenhat?
Sometimes by Walmart, sometimes by Wackenhat, but it was the defense.
Did you get the credit for the Walmart objection?
Absolutely. When we have a joint defense and the respondents object to something that's been said and there's an argument, that has been brought to the court's attention to be ruled upon. Mr. Harper did not say that the post orders were part of the contract. You can read his testimony. There was a hearing on the mistrial, second day of trial, pages 42 to 48. The Walmart got a defense verdict because they had state-of-the-art security. They had state-of-the-art security. The jury had been misled to believe they had to stick it to somebody, and so they stuck it to the poor kid who was driving around and should have saved the life.
Okay, thank you, counsel. Again, I try to sort this out. It's a little confusing as far as the factual background, but we appreciate all your fine briefs and arguments, and we'll take this matter under submission.
Thank you.
I'll be in recess until tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock.